Welcome to episode 97. This episode is sponsored by Shelby Flooring Limited, domestic and commercial flooring experts. For all your flooring needs in Hertfordshire and the surrounding areas, Shelby Flooring Limited specialise in everything from laminate vinyl tiles to carpet and engineered timber flooring, to name but a few. Go to shelbyflooring.co.uk or call 07706 479860 now. My guest on this episode is Jacob Armstrong, and while pretty much every interview you will hear or read with him will mention that his dad is Green Day's Billy Joe Armstrong, and because it became apparent that he didn't rely on nepotism to help his band, I tried to respect that by not bringing it up. Sorry if you wanted to know what Billy Joe has for breakfast. We did, however, talk about his band Ultra Q and their new album, My Guardian Angel, his love for The Strokes and The Cure, AI technology used for the band's artwork and insane music videos, songwriting, surfing, his producer, writing in COVID and more. And I will add, he was an absolute gentleman. Please follow me on Twitter and all other places at Real Feedback Pod, and do yourself a favour and order My Guardian Angel now and get it in your ear holes. This isn't an interview, this is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. So it's, what, 11 a.m. over where you are?
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock right now, so it's still early or late-ish in the morning, early in the day still, but yeah.
Are you an early riser, or are you...
I am, yeah. I like to get up early. It's because I'm one of my big hobbies is surfing. So I like the early morning, you know, getting up early, getting on the road, and going to go surf and stuff. So
right, I tried it once and I failed miserably. A friend of mine used to teach surfing, and there's a place down in the south west of England called Newquay, which is. Okay. Has got the best. If you surf in England, which, you know, there's not that many places that it's good, but yeah. Newquay's where to go.
Okay,
and
cool.
we did a stag do, which is like a bachelor party type thing, and we went down there, and part of it was he was teaching us surfing, and I had no idea how difficult it is just to stand up.
it's tough. I've heard that there's good surfing also in Cornwall. Right.
I'm going to say Newquay is in Cornwall, and then cut it out okay. if I'm wrong.
So, yeah. I've always wanted to travel to surf, but I've never been, you know, obviously over to go surfing over there. But maybe one day if I get lucky and I can go out there and go travel and surf and stuff. But yeah.
What's the surfer's ideal place then? Is it where you are, or is there a certain country? Or
I'm in the Bay Area. So I'm in, like, right now, if I want to go surfing, I'm in Oakland, and I have to go across the bridge into San Francisco, go to the Outer Sunset, and go to Ocean Beach. That's usually where I go surfing. It's not a great place to learn, but if, you know, I'm used to it. It can be kind of treacherous, you know, like it's known as a beach break. So the waves can either be really small or they can be absolutely enormous, you know? So sometimes they can be kind of dangerous and stuff. I think people generally love Southern California because the water is much warmer. You know, up here I have to wear like a thick wetsuit with the hood, you know, and stuff to stay warm in the boots. But yeah, I mean, honestly, most of California is known for just being like a great place to surf, you know. but I'd love to travel to go surfing. That's like a dream of mine one day to try and do, like, go to South America maybe, or even like Mexico or something. But yeah,
I think it's Mexico at the end of is it Point Break, Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze, and the very end scene where I'm sure it's somewhere like Mexico, and he tracks it down, and I'll just watch that. That's not for me.
yeah.
Sadly, the closest water to me, because I'm just on the outskirts of London, so it would be a canoe down the River Thames would probably be the most exciting that I could get. So you're a week away from the release. Is that weird that it's now so close?
It's really weird. I had this moment. I was talking with our bass player Kevin yesterday, and we were like, dude, can you believe it comes out in a week? And we were just like, that just feels wrong, you know? Like, it's because we were, you know, we've made the process of this whole, you know, record started so long ago, and it just feels weird that it's time's been moving so fast the last couple of months. So it's like, it feels weird for sure.
How long has it been finished?
It's been, we've had the masters since early August.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. We re-recorded this. We tracked it in February of 2022. And then I finished recording vocals on it in like late spring of that year. And then we mixed it over the summer and then got the masters back in the beginning of August. So we've had it for like, what is that, like 8 months now, I guess.
And it's part of that, because some of the reason why from other musicians that I speak to is it, I don't know if it's coming out on vinyl, but the lead time for vinyl is so long, because it's just so backed up and there's not enough pressing plants that they go, well, we've had it in the can for, you know, nearly a year and we've had to wait for the vinyl.
No, we originally were planning on releasing it earlier, and then it just made sense with the vinyl, and then also, you know, nowadays putting out so many singles and stuff, it's like it just made sense to kind of give it more lead time. And so we did, and we got the vinyl, and you know, because it seems like it's kind of silly that like one thing like vinyl would like push back a release, but like for a band that's our size, like selling vinyl on tour is one of, you know, it's where we make our money to go on tour, you know, because people love, for whatever reason, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but people love buying vinyl at shows. Like, it just, for some reason, like, there's some shows where we'll sell more vinyl than shirts, you know? So it's definitely like, it makes sense. You know, it wasn't the only reason why we had it, you know, come out so much later than when we finished it, but it definitely was a super large factor, because it just, as a touring band, it just made sense, you know, like we need to have it on tour. So.
How good is it to, because I used to have a band years ago, we never released anything on vinyl. Mm-hmm. And then we got back together last year and did an album, and we talked about the vinyl thing, but it just wasn't for you know, we weren't signed and it was expensive and all that. But I've always just imagined holding in my hand.
Yeah.
Because you get, you know, streaming stuff, you get a tiny little thumbnail, but to have like a big in your hand bit of artwork. With I don't know if you've got your lyrics on there as well.
Yeah, no, we've got a ton of artwork with it and stuff. And I remember we were on tour in October, actually, and that's when they sent us our test pressings. And we got them in Chicago. We were staying with our friend in Chicago, and we got them. We were like, oh my God, I guess we can listen to it. So we put it on the record. We listened to it, and I remember being like, it's never sounded as good as it does, like, right here, even on like the small, you know, the small speakers in his room, you know, compared to when we're listening to it like in the studio, even, it's just, for whatever reason, there's like a magic to listening to your record on vinyl. And then and then it was months later they mailed me like my own copy, you know, I got one in the mail and I with like all, you know, the artwork and the sleeve and stuff, and I was like, oh my God, you know, it's crazy to see. It's such a moment. So it was very special.
And halfway through, you have to stand up and walk over and turn it over to listen to the second half.
Yes, you do. But that's the fun of it. You know, you get an A and a B side, which is cool, because we actually like kind of planned the record in that. Like when we were doing our track list and stuff, we like planned it as like an A and a B side. You know, so like I don't know. It feels right. You know, when side A finishes, to be like, okay, time to go to side B. You know,
yeah.
So it all felt just right and perfect, you know. So
you mentioned the artwork, is because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was some of your music videos, because they are frightening. There's this new thing now that with the AI thing, there's this guy on TikTok, I can't remember his name, but he does this thing where it's an image and then it turns into this weird, it's exactly the sort of animation that you've got in a lot of your videos, especially Klepto, which is kind of that Evil Dead sort of weird, but where it's constantly changing, and it feels like if you were, you know, embarking on the mushrooms, that it would be a very bad thing to watch. I just wanted you to see if you could chat a bit about who does it and how and why.
I mean, 100%. I mean, so the guy who does it, it's this guy, we found him on Instagram. His name is KingKon2K11 on Instagram. And he's just like an AI video artist, you know, like, and it's really cool actually, because, you know, I myself was really, you know, up to this point, I had made myself like most of the Ultra Q videos up to that point, you know, and, you know, I'm really into like using video analog video synthesizers to like do cool, you know, video feedback. And like, I was doing all these like fun kind of practical effect things, you know, that was really fun and cool to make. And so it feels like in the same vein of that, which is also really cool. Like it didn't feel like it was going, like his videos were like going so far away from that, you know, like having fun, you know, effects that are very like, you know, this is a person who made them, you know, even though it is like, you know, obviously it's an AI, like he uses AI programs and stuff to make his videos. But we just found him on Instagram and we sent him a DM and we were like, hey, like, would you ever make a music video for us? And he was like, sure, let's do it. And then, you know, it just became a thing where on the first video and the second video, we filmed a lot of, like, I filmed a lot of the footage myself and then I sent it to him over, cause he's in the UK actually. And then he like used our footage and then, you know, did his stuff with the software. And then that was the video. And then after that, we were just like, you know, run wild with it. Like just do your stuff. So like the rest of it is just him, like, you know, he's filming it or he's taking clips from other, you know, like from obscure movies or videos and using those and then, you know, overlaying the software onto it. And it's funny because like we didn't necessarily go into, I think the reason why we wanted to use a lot of the, because we also used AI to create our cover artwork as well. And I think this theme for us came from is that like, you know, when we started our band, you know, back when we were in high school, you know, we were just like a kind of garage rock band. And we, you know, very simple, two guitars, bass, drums, you know, that's what we were for so long. We just play punk shows and that was, you know, what we wanted to do. And then I think though, what happened with Ultra Q is that we eventually, you know, started to, you know, meld a lot of the other music that we like to listen to, you know, such as like, you know, more dance focused stuff like LCD Sound System or, you know, Interpol or Stroke, you know, whatever, like shoegaze elements, you know, like, cause we're super into all sorts of music, you know? And so I think when we were making this record, it felt like it was kind of this foreign idea to us because we were using all these we were playing with all these synthesizers. I was making drum loops that I was like, you know, I was sampling break beats, you know, like on, like I Watch Them Go, for instance. And, you know, we were affecting my voice, you know, in a weird way. And so it felt like this kind of very foreign, but also familiar, process. And also we were getting, yeah. And as well as the results in the actual, songs themselves. And so I think that that's kind of what the AI music videos and artwork and aesthetic kind of brought that I think really works with our record is that it's both. I think the reason why it makes people unsettled to watch them is because it's that uncanny valley thing where it's foreign, but still familiar, you know? And so I think that's kind of what this album was to us, where it's like, it's a little bit out of our wheelhouse, but in like a familiar and good way, you know? Cause it's,
yeah,
mesh of all of our favorite music is what this album is to us. It's taking everything, you know, all the stuff we listen to and then just going, even if it's something, even if it's like a, like more hyper pop drum and bass song, like I Watch Them Go, or if it's straight up like a punk song, like VR Sex, it's like, we just didn't really say no. We were just like, we're going to make what we want to make. And so that's what it was. So I think it works together really well with the aesthetic, the AI stuff that we were doing. And it's also just really fun too. I think
it's going to be amazing for some forms of art, and it's going to kill or be really detrimental, particularly to music when the people create AI music.
But
someone will find a way to utilize it in a way that's creative, I'm sure. But yeah, the AI videos where they do the fake pizza adverts and people are putting pizza through their face, but it just but it looks so nightmarish, and it's something I've never seen before. I can't get my head around it. It's frightening. I'm waiting for the first horror movie to come out that's done using AI, because it's going to scare the shit out of everything.
Yeah, I mean, because for us, like, I think to your point too, it's like, yeah, like it's really just a tool. It's really just a tool for artists to use, and you know, and like just like any other tool, if it's bad art, that tool isn't going to make the art better or worse. You know, it's like, it's got to be, you know, in service. It's in service of what you're already doing and your vision and what, you know, this guy, Connor, you know, he's just already, he's got it. He's got like a very, he's got a director's mindset and he's very creative in this way. And so him using it as a tool, you know, like you can see, and you can see that in his videos, I think, you know, so I think it's just like any other tool where like, it's got it, you know, it's in service of what you're making, you know? So if it's not, what you're making isn't amazing, then like it's not going to elevate it or destroy it. You know, it's just going to be in service of that. So,
so you mentioned that the band used to be, you know, very simple, two guitars, bass, drums, garage rock band. One of the things that I love about the album, so the first time I listened to the album, I thought, right, this isn't the sort of thing I would normally listen to, but I like it. And then I kept listening to it and I listened to it. And after about the fifth or sixth listen, and when all the songs start to separate, like they do on an album when you've heard it a few times, although some of the songs very much separate themselves immediately, but we'll get to that. I started to get stuff from it that I didn't expect to get. And I started to really listen to the song, you know, as someone who's written a lot of songs, as obviously not in a signed band, but I kind of understand the process, understand the recording process. And I just thought, it's four guys, it's two guitars, but some of the sounds is so intricate. And I thought, how do you sit down and write a song like that? So what was the transition from four friends in a garage banging out punk tunes to playing stuff like what we're hearing, you know, like I watched them go being the, I thought my Spotify kicked in and overridden what I was listening to. It was so different Rock It, which was before it. I was like, what's happened? Oh, it's the same album. Cause it's like this drum and bass.
No, that's a great question. So we were, you know, I think like a lot of people, I think the answer to this one is probably, you know, lockdown and COVID happened, you know, cause we, you know, the last thing we put out before COVID was this EP called In a Cave in a Video Game. And that's like a hardcore punk album, you know, it's very Minor Threat inspired. And it's like, you know, fast guitars, fast drums, you know, doing the like wire hi-hat stuff, you know, and that, you know, that's what I was into and that's what we were into. And so that's what we made. And then COVID happened and we couldn't jam anymore and we couldn't like, you know, sit in a room and just like work on stuff together, you know? And so I just became really obsessed. I, you know, I'd always recorded my own demos and, you know, done my own stuff. But, you know, during COVID, I was like, okay, I really want to get good at this. So I started, you know, getting obsessed with Ableton and learning how to record my own demos and getting great quality and sampling and doing all this stuff. And then one day I just found out, you know, after months and honestly, at this point, probably years of doing it and just like experimenting, I found myself with a library of sounds and stuff that I had, you know, acquired over the years, you know, Charlie XCX samples, you know, Pink Panther samples and all this stuff. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. And then I think the first song that I wrote that was like for this album was Rip, funnily. It's like WRIP, Rip. And it's like this, you know, shoegazy, you know, wall of sound song with the whispery vocal thing and tons of delay on the vocals and stuff. And then slowly I started with Rip and I started going through, it's like, yeah, like this is like what we're doing, but it's kind of a little bit different. And then slowly I found myself getting further and further away from it as I wrote more, you know, and next thing you know, like I had this sample library of drum beats. They're like these like kind of tape recordings of drum break beats. And what I did is I used this thing called Simpler in Ableton, where you can take the transients of a sample. So if it's a drum break beat, it'll chop up the beat based on the kick and the snare and stuff, you know, as like wherever those transients are, and you could assign them to MIDI pads. And I was playing the different, like I was playing the drum beat, but in different patterns. And I created the drum pattern for, I watched them go. And then I just was like, here we go. It's off. You know, like I'm so in, you know, like I'm so, let's do this, you know? And then I created that song. And what's really great about it is we used so much of my demos in the actual recordings. What we did is we just went into the studio with Chris Cody and he had all these vintage preamps and we just ran my my drum sample that I made through his preamps and recorded it right onto the track, you know? So we just used a lot of my stuff already, which was awesome. And so I think what this, what I'm trying to say is like, I've been writing songs for so long, and I think this was such a great challenge for me as like a songwriter to try and do something that wasn't totally in my wheelhouse originally. But also what's so great is that it feels like it also was exactly what I was supposed to make. You know, it just worked. I don't know. Like there's not much to it. I just slowly over COVID, it just kind of morphed into, I'm just going to make whatever interests me, you know. Eventually I like right now, like the stuff we're demoing right now is definitely, you know, it's more Interpol and classic two guitar stuff, but I don't know, it just kind of happened. And then that's also been one of the great challenges too, is now that we're touring again and we're playing and we're trying to figure out how to play these songs. My guitar player Enzo, he has just, his pedal board has become this spaceship. And I can't, it's to the point where I don't even understand what he's doing.
I haven't got enough feet. Exactly. To press everything.
and then we'll go to play the songs now, and like we're playing the songs, and it's because we all spent so much time learning how to like just kind of almost obsessing over our individual parts in this and our roles in this. And I think it's made us a better band because of it. And I think that, and I hope that it comes through in the recordings and in the album, you know, like when it does come out. So
Chris Cody, because you're the guy that produced the record, because he produced, Teen Dream by Beach House, which is an album that I really love.
He's done three of the big.
Well, I looked him up today. TV on the Radio, yes, loads of stuff. So how did the label choose him for you? Did you know of his work?
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't that familiar with Beach House going into it. Our bass player Kevin, he's like a diehard Beach House fan. So when we heard that he was interested, he was like, you know, going crazy, and I was like, oh God, maybe I need to check him out. So I went, I listened to Beach House, and I was like, holy shit. You know, well, I was already stoked because, you know, just seeing the name, you know, TV on the Radio, big fan, the AAS, you know, he did. I was like, oh my God, you know, like that was already crazy to me. So then, and then I went and I listened through Beach House, those Beach House records, and I was like, oh my God, these are incredible. And the way that happened was, he's done the guy who owns our record label, the guy who signed us, his name is Menno, and he's known Chris Cody for a long time, and so they're just like friends. And I guess he just asked him, he's like, hey, I've got this new band, would you want to do a record with them? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. So it was very just like, it was like, holy shit, it's happening, you know, because we had, you know, talked about a few other people who were, you know, a few other people that we were, you know, thinking about working with. And then when his name came up, I was like, okay, we have to do that. And it was very surreal, you know, it like being in, cause we recorded it, in his house at his home studio. And then we did also for all the live drums, we went to East West Studios in LA in Studio 3, which is where they recorded, Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys.
Oh my God.
That's where we recorded drums. And that was being in there too. I was like, so the whole, like it was 2 weeks, and then I came back a few months later to finish the vocals, but it was those 2 weeks, that whole experience was just kind of, I pinched myself, you know, and I kind of can't believe that happened. And that, you know, to me was mind blowing. And then also now I text with him all the time. He's like, he's one of my good friends now who I like, I ask for advice all the time about, and he's so smart and he's so like, I just tried to sit and like, watch him over his shoulder like the whole time and just learn as much as I could, and it was such a great experience, and I'm so happy with the way the record turned out because of it. You know, like I don't think it would have worked nearly as well if he wasn't involved. And so we just feel lucky, really just feel lucky, you know. I actually just went and I saw on kind of a related note, I saw The Cure just play in LA. And it was at the Hollywood Bowl. And after I was leaving, and we're all like, the whole crowd was like, you know, everyone was leaving the venue and we're all like stuck together. And I look over, I'm like, oh my God, that's Nick Zinner right there. Oh, and I walked over, I tapped him on the shoulder and I was like, hey man, I don't want to bother you, but I just want to say I'm a big fan. You know, we just did our record with Chris Cody and he was like, oh yeah, he's the best. He's the best. And so like another great moment where I fanboyed over Nick Zinner.
Because if you just say I'm a fan of Yeah Yeahs, he may have just gone, yeah, fine, thanks. But quickly get the name in, Chris Cody. So we can have a conversation now.
Yeah. It was very short. Yeah. But he was very nice too. And so, but yeah, Chris Cody, amazing producer, amazing mixing engineer too. And just, it was so fun to watch him work. And this, what's amazing too is, this, even the stuff that he's doing now, like he's, you know, the bands that he's also working with right now are so great. Like he did the recent Surf Curse record. He did, he's doing the new Dive record. And so he's done so many great records also.
I had a conversation with the last episode I did? This British band, Chupacabra Wrestling, Chupacabra New York, Chupacabra okay. Wrestling, they're called, and love the album. And I randomly read that they like Dive, and I've never met anyone else who's even heard of Dive over here.
Oh,
so we chatted for about 5 minutes.
Oh, yes. I love me some Dive. Well, it's to me also, because I was also such a big Beach Fossils fan, too. I'm a huge Beach Fossils fan, and I'm pretty sure... Is it the singer that used to be was the original drummer of Beach Fossils, I think?
Right.
I'm pretty sure. I might have the wrong member mixed up, but I know one of them was in Beach Fossils at some point, which is a really cool connection as well. But yeah, I remember when Blankenship came out, I was on tour at the time, and I listened to it so much in the car and stuff. They're another great band, yeah.
So one of the things that immediately became apparent is how amazing your drummer is. He also called Chris, same as your producer.
Yeah.
So does he play I Watch Them Go? Will he be playing that live? Wow.
Well, we're not doing it on this tour because we're opening, and so we don't have, you know, enough time to play like all the new, you know, every new song. But we played that song live. We had a show back in November in Oakland, and we played that song live, and he's fucking playing that drum beat and it blew my mind. I'm like, I don't know how we're doing this, but we are. And so yeah, he's incredible. And yes, he learned how to play that drum beat on.
I'd like to have seen his face the first time you said this is the next song we're gonna do. What?
Yeah, no, we put him through some tough spots sometimes, but it's, you know, I think the challenge is what makes it fun for us, I think. So
yeah, I mean, you know, you say about because of COVID, you could have just as easily phoned the guys and gone, yeah, I'm just going to do it with an acoustic guitar now and gone really introvert on yourself and just become like a folk singer. But so they obviously had to be on board with these new ideas of yours. Was there any pushback on the style but they were just happy to try out whatever you put to them?
Pretty much, yeah. I remember I just slowly started sending over demos and we would just talk about it, you know, on the phone and stuff. And, you know, I think in sometimes they wanted me to even go further, you know, like they were like, let's get even more weird with it. You know, like I think when you, cause I've known Chris and Enzo, the drummer and the guitar player, they're brothers. I've known them since like we were 5 years old, 6 years old, you know, and I started playing with Chris when we were in middle school. So I was probably like 11. When we first started jamming together, and then, you know, we all went to high school together. And so we've been jamming forever. And when you've been playing in a band for that long, it's like, eventually you're going to want to get weird. Like, I feel like it's just inevitable. Like most of the times you're going to want to get weird with it. I think what's really fun though, is that we got weird with it, but in like a pop way, which I think, you know, it's in a pop leaning way at least, you know? And so, I think that we were just all ready to just do something else, you know, like I think we were all like I sent over I Watched Them Go and they were like sick, you know, like let's do it. And I think it was rising to the challenge was definitely what made it interesting for us.
But then on the album so that's the first curveball in terms of what your expectations by Rocket, which is the third track, and then you got I Watched Them Go, which is okay, all bets are off. And then that's followed up by Web, 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 which is, it's not a doo-wop ballad, but it's got this very sort of old sensibility to it. One of my favorite songs on the album.
Thank you.
So the track listing, which is so difficult, and I've said this before, a guest on who said that a 12-track song album has so many hundreds of thousands or even millions of possible ways that you could do it. So you said that you kind of thought about the A and the B, but how do you, were there any obvious, because like Teether, for example, you've already released Teether and recorded it. Why did you want to re-record that song?
Well, you know, it was done. That was recorded just me. Like that EP in A Cave in a Video Game was recorded by just me, you know? And I think we wanted to, you know, it had electronic drums on it, just like a drum machine on it at the time. And I think we wanted to just, or I think, you know, I was the champion of that one. I think I was the one who was like, we really should give this one another go, just because I felt like that song deserved like a full recording, you know, like it felt like a song that was due for a full recording. And then also I liked the way it felt at the end of the record. Because like you said, you know, like our track listing on this thing is very, you know, there's curveballs that are thrown and then it kind of comes back to earth a little bit more and then it'll get weirder again. And, you know, and then it felt like a great resolution, you know, it felt like a great way to bring it back down to earth a bit of like, okay, this is a song that we wrote before, you know, and it feels like it works at the end of the track list. You know, like it definitely was a struggle at first to figure out how to order this thing. And like, there were some obvious ones, like that song Saturday in VR Sex, those were written as like track one and two, you know, like as soon as I wrote those, I was like, I wrote Saturday and I like, I know this is track one. And then I wrote later on, I wrote VR Sex being like, cause I wanted a track two. Like I was really into, one of my favorite albums growing up was the second album by Pup. If the Steward Doesn't Kill You, Then I Will. And they have this great opening song and second song duo where it's like this kind of slow opening song. And then it comes to this fast, you know, like this super hard double time, song, that's, in the two spot. And, I knew that with having Saturday track one, I wanted that for track two. So I went and I wrote, and I was also really into MCR at the time. And so I went and I wrote that as a track two. But when we were recording this with Chris Cody, and his favorite song on the record was I Watched Them Go. Like that was his favorite song to make. And I was like, that's really reassuring. And so.
Yeah. Cause he could have just been like,
no, 100%. He could have really been like, what are you guys doing? 100%. Yeah. He could have totally been that way. But he was like, but he was like, dude, this is my favorite one on the record, I think. And I'm like, wow, that's so reassuring and so cool. So it kind of just fell into place as we recorded it. And as we, you know, it went through different versions before we recorded it and then we recorded it. And then afterwards it was like, okay, it just kind of fell into place and things sort of made sense the way they were. I knew, because originally before I wrote Saturday, Rip was track one. And so I knew, okay, that's going to be track one of side B, you know, is how I thought of it. So it kind of just fell into place is the way I would describe it.
Because I found myself singing the end of Saturday at the beginning of VR Sex.
Because
that's in the same key. Hang on, is it say? And I was, yeah, you can put that in there. So it's nice to know that it was an intentional duality thing.
I think my favorite one is Saturday just because it has, when I wrote the song, I was screaming New Order lyrics to it. And from their track Dreams Never End. And so I changed it up a little bit, but I still kept some of it, you know, which I really, it's a very near and dear song to my heart. So that's my favorite track on the record.
Because I mean, there's a couple of tracks. I've read that you're a big Strokes fan and The Cure, and you can hear the influence. And I don't ever think that's a bad thing. And the example I give is like a recent example is Alex Turner with Arctic Monkeys and the direction he's taken that band. That he sees people like Scott Walker or Serge Gainsbourg and stuff, and you can hear that it sounds like the. But so when I say it's so very emo, for example, sounds like sort of Come Down Machine era Strokes for me. but not, it sounds like a Strokes song. It sounds like you like the Strokes, you've interpreted and put your voice into it. So I hope that's not, because also I've got a, for listeners who don't know the songs, you've got to kind of paint a picture of it. It sounds a bit like this.
Yeah.
So what was it about a band like the Strokes? Because for me, the age I am, being a lot older than you, I was your kind of age. No, I was younger, but when they first came out. But you've obviously discovered them, I don't know, three albums in, because...
Well, yeah. I remember the Strokes are what made me want to play guitar as a kid. Like that was, that's why I wanted to pick up a guitar. Was I remember driving to school when I was in probably fourth grade. We had a CD mix that I think my mom made, and she would just put it in the car. And I remember Passengers by Iggy Pop would play. And then I remember Modern Age would play by the Strokes. And then Fluorescent Adolescence by Arctic Monkeys would play, was on it too. Like I'm trying to remember the Fratellis was on it. But yeah, so like I remember Is This It was the first album I discovered where I was like, God damn, I want to play guitar. You know, like they're the coolest guys I've ever seen, you know? Yeah. And then I went on YouTube, I looked up and I found like their $2 MTV $2 bill concert that they did. You know, it's super famous live recording of them playing those songs. And
oh, is that the one that's really sort of oversaturated color wise?
Yeah. They have like the Strokes with like light bulbs on it in the background of them. And it's just, and like all the people are sitting around them and they're playing on this like small stage. And they're just so, and it, I remember just being like, these guys are so cool, you know? And the songs are so, that's another thing. The songs are so timeless and so amazing and so good. And they're the band that made me want to pick up the guitar. Now, later though, when I found finding the Cure, that was when I was like, I'd always been self-conscious because, you know, I was, you know, kind of a larger guy growing up. And I was always felt like kind of like an oaf a little bit, you know? And so discovering the Cure and Robert Smith was one of the most like comforting things I think ever in my life, just because I related so much to him and to like the songs that he was writing too. And I just loved that as a band that they could go from writing the darkest goth songs in pornography ever to like The Walk, and then to In Between Day, you know, and close, you know, to some of the greatest pop songs ever made, you know. And to me, that was, you know, what was so inspiring. And I remember being like, this is like what I, like, I want to be able to do that. And so I think that's honestly where also this album comes from too, is just knowing that they can do, like seeing them do whatever they want to do and finding success in that. Like, that's what made me want to, you know, be in this band and do our own thing and, you know, have songs like I Watch Them Go and have songs like VR Sex and stuff, you know, and ride that line, you know, between what's darker and poppier and stuff. But yeah, the Cure, my all time favorite band. They're the most inspiring to me.
Cause there's a couple of other songs in there. What was the one? There's a band in England, I don't know if you heard of it, called Block Party.
Oh yeah.
Who I'm a big fan of as well. And Rocket kind of has a bit of a Block Party vibe to me. I don't know if you ever listened to them, but.
So
the tour that's coming up, who are you opening for? What's the next phase once the album's out?
Yeah. So the album comes out right now in like about a week and a half on June 9th. So it's a week from Friday. And on that day, we're playing the Metro in Chicago, which is like a crazy, you know, dream venue to play. We're opening for Waves and Cloud Nothings, who are like, that's also, but getting this tour was also surreal because I was such a big fan of Waves in high school and growing up with them too. So it's very surreal to be opening for them on this tour. And I just can't wait to play, you know, we're getting to play all these venues that we've never been able to play before. It's the biggest tour we've ever been on. And so, yeah, so we're opening for Waves and Cloud Nothings in the States. And then, after that, it's strange. After that, we kind of don't know what we're doing, you know, like we're going to be, you know, off the record label. Our deal is just the EP and the album. So that's going to be done. And then, you know, we're just kind of, we get off the tour. We don't really have all that much plan until later in the year. And so we're kind of like, what do we do? Like, I guess we just keep promoing the record we just put out, I guess.
I think you need to fire up Ableton and see what occurs.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Yeah. So it's, I hope we get more show just right now. You know, I'm sure you're aware of, you know, how competitive it is trying to get, there's so many artists and musicians bands that are trying to tour and trying to release music and stuff, and it's so difficult, you know, and competitive. So like, we've been submitting for tours, and you know, we're really lucky we got this one. It's, you know, it's awesome, but yeah, as of right now, we don't have anything else lined up. So yeah,
it is insanely hard. I mean, that when I mentioned earlier my band that got back together, we struggled back in the day. You know, we had some success. We had a few record deal meetings that never came to fruition. Played with a couple of bands that people would have heard of, and then it never happened. And then so when we reformed last year, for myself, it was just to make some music. Mm-hmm. But the other two guys were really keen on trying to push it. I was like, guys, we're in our 40s, and it didn't work where we were 25. It's not going to work now, and it didn't. You know, and they tried really hard to push it. Social media got us on the radio, and you've got to do it all yourself. The labels,
seem to want
the finished package when you arrive. You know,
they do.
Arctic Monkeys being the prime example. In 2005, they had a following, massive following on MySpace. I think it was. So then, was it Domino? Who are they signed to? I can't remember.
I think it was Domino.
We'll take that. Thanks very much. And there you go.
Yeah, well, wasn't that first record the fastest selling record in like the UK history or something? Yeah, it's fucking bonkers. You know, it blows my mind. It's definitely tricky. You know, I feel like a lot of people have expectations that. When you're in the band, like I feel like right now the expectation is if you're starting a band and you're an artist, is that you have to have success immediately, and that you have to have this, like, you know, kind of very, you know, upwards momentum going, you know, right off the bat. And it's so hard. You know, I've been doing that. I'm 24 now, almost 25. I've been doing it since I was 16. I've been releasing music. And so like, It's not that long in the scheme of things, but for a lot of people that would seem like, you know, that's a minute making music and releasing it, you know, and
that's longer than the Beatles were together.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's this expectation that you have to have like the success early on, and that you have to be grinding it out so hard. And it's like, it's not sustainable to have that mindset, because you're going to release music and it might do that. It might not. And if it doesn't, that can be so devastating to your mental, you know, it can feel so devastating because you spend so much time on it. And so I think for us, one of the things we're trying to keep in mind all the time is that it doesn't have to be so black and white. It can be like something that we, you know, maybe we won't be the most successful band ever, but you know, in 10 years, if we're still a band, to me, that's success, you know?
Yeah.
And in 15 years, if we're still playing gigs on the weekend, that's everything. So,
writing what you want to write and delivering not what's expected, you know?
Exactly. And writing what we want to write, putting out what we want to put out, and still enjoying it, you know, like 6 years and I'm still enjoying it. That's success to me. So, I think we're going to put this out. We're going to do our best with it. And then, you know, we're going to make more music and we're going to continue on with our lives. So, yeah.
Well, I wish you all the very best, because it's a top album. And
thank you.
I'm going to be plugging it from this end. Not that hopefully it makes some difference. But
thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all. And you've opened my ears to something new, which I didn't expect to. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
It's really great. And I wish you guys all the best of it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.